Thanks, David. In part two, I'm handing the mic over to my colleague, George Burrows, who follows up with water expert Pat Mulroy on the water crisis and responses in Nevada and California, an update to the podcast published in April. Mulroy is editor of a forthcoming Brookings Institution Press title, Water Policy in the Face of Climate Change, Strategies for Resilience, Sustainability, and Regional Competitiveness. Thanks, David. In part two, I'm handing the mic over to my colleague, George Burrows, who follows up with water expert Pat Mulroy on the water crisis and responses in Nevada and California, an update to the podcast published in April. Mulroy is editor of a forthcoming Brookings Institution Press title, Water Policy in the Face of Climate Change, Strategies for Resilience, Sustainability, and Regional Competitiveness.
So you're gonna go the other thing you're gonna do.
Do we need to re-record the This Is an Event podcast from the Brookings Institution?
It's somewhere. I just can't remember. Where? May as well do it. You're just gonna say This Is an Events podcast from
the Brookings Institution to get in-depth interviews with scholars. Listen to our.
I'll find it. I know we.
Okay.
We worked on it last time.
All right. Lentil vegetable soup. Yeah,
very
from
good.
The can.
Right.
Although now I found out the most soup can brands have BHP inside the lining that leaches out. I mean, come on.
Now
really?
Address,
all right. We are going to start here in a second when you close the door, right?
So give me, this is my first podcast. Tell me how this works, how you guys use it.
We're going to record.
Do you guys cut it and edit it?
Well, on that question, Zach will cut out any of our ums and ahs. If you have to restart any response, feel free to just kind of pause and then just restart, and Zach will know how to cut it out. Usually, though, we'll have a complete take from when I say welcome to the blah, blah, blah to the credits.
Okay.
I will pause for a second. It sounds awkward, but I'll pause for a second at the top because we insert a previously recorded piece. It's kind of in the middle of the intro. It's mm-hmm. going to be David Wessel. It's what we call a segment.
Oh.
And he gives like a 4 or 5 minute economic update. And then we go into the interview. Then we put the audio onto our website as a piece of content, a podcast.
Yes.
It'll appear on your web bio. Amy Liu and Fred Dews as the authors. We syndicate it out to iTunes and Stitcher and all the different kind of podcast readers.
Great.
Or devices, whatever you call
them. Yeah, and we're actually doing pretty well.
They perform
well. Yeah, it's like, we get probably about 3,000 downloads per episode, which in podcasting world is pretty good.
Yeah, some up to 5,000.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for a big splash. And so then our social media team will coordinate with Terrence and whoever else on your team to promote it.
Okay.
Thomas also mentioned that you have a report based on your trip coming out in August. So can I just mention that is coming out?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now we can start to have a few. I think we'll publish this in early July. And I have a big surprise to mention here in the podcast taping in a minute about that. So we'll publish that in early July. So we'll have a few pieces kind of coming out about New Orleans and what's going on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you have any questions, feel free. We can hear you out here. And we're rolling. So when I close the door, you can start.
Great.
Yes, all of that was on tape. Okay.
Usually, how long is it?
30, 40 minutes.
Wow.
Almost.
Yeah. Wow, it's a long podcast.
Welcome to the Brookings Cafeteria, a podcast about ideas and the experts who have them. I'm your host, Fred Dews. In today's episode, I talk with a Brookings expert who recently visited New Orleans ahead of the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina striking the Gulf Coast. Stay tuned to hear her take on rebuilding efforts in New Orleans. But first up, David Wessel's economic update. My guest today is Amy Liu, a senior fellow and co-director of the Metropolitan Policy Program here at Brookings. Her policy studies include economic competitiveness, metropolitan growth and development, governance reforms, urban reinvestment, and social equity. Through her work directly with metropolitan, regional, state, and national leaders, she helps address the most pressing challenges and opportunities facing our communities. Amy, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
I'm very excited to announce that this is the 50th episode of the Brookings Cafeteria podcast. I'm extra delighted that you're my guest here.
Well, congratulations, Fred.
Thank you. Let's talk about the greater New Orleans area. On August 29th, 2005, Nearly 10 years ago, Hurricane Katrina made landfall in southeastern Louisiana, just south of New Orleans. Over 1,800 people died. More than a million people were displaced to neighboring states. And the economic cost was estimated to exceed $100 billion, the costliest disaster in U.S. history. Soon thereafter, in subsequent years, you became one of, I would say, the country's leading experts on post-recovery New Orleans and the greater New Orleans region. Can you talk about how and why you became so involved in this particular issue?
Well, first of all, being at the Brookings Metro Program, it was really obvious to all of us in the program that when this disaster struck, one of the most important, special, major urban centers in the United States, that we had to respond. And we did it in a way that I think was really unique to Metro, which is we wanted to make sure that as all this national and federal and philanthropic attention got put on the city and the Gulf region, that we used our data to inform investments and policies to make sure that New Orleans recovered from the disaster stronger than it was before. And that's why we created what was originally the Katrina Index. Mm-hmm. That became the New Orleans Index. We did that in partnership with the Greater New Orleans Data Center, which is called the Data Center today. And that partnership between Brookings and the local leadership still stands true today. And I'm really proud of the work, but I'm even more proud of the people and the community and the organizations in New Orleans.
Do you recall the first time you visited New Orleans after this disaster struck?
I've been to New Orleans so many times, I don't know if I can recall my first visit. But I have to say that I went down, I think one of my first visits was when a group of scholars from Brookings, a small group of us went down, and we were invited by the Louisiana Recovery Authority, which the governor had impaneled right away to organize the state-federal coordinated response to rebuilding this community. And so as part of that trip, we got a tour of the damaged areas from the lower Ninth Ward to Gentilly to see the broken levees, to see the devastation. And it is, I still have photos from that trip, and they're quite stunning.
Right. It must have been hard to see that. Around the time of the fifth anniversary in 2010, and this was after two additional disasters that you flagged, the Gulf oil spill and the recession. After those affected New Orleans, you wrote that, quote, the city of New Orleans and its region stand out as a bold experiment in rebirth and reinvention. Now, you've just returned from a trip to New Orleans. How would you update that statement today?
I think that New Orleans is still in the middle of a major urban experiment. But I would say it's an urban experiment that is not so much just about responding to Katrina and the oil spill, but really is the great experiment of our time, which is regardless of any environmental or economic disaster like the Great Recession, the loss of a manufacturing sector, is how does an economic center, a population center, really continue to grow and adapt? That's why we picked at the five-year anniversary a shift in the way we look at this issue. It wasn't just about rebuilding, but about resilience. Is New Orleans really, is it going to transform itself as a better version of what it was before the storm and continue on a more prosperous path? Or is it going to return to its path before the storm, which was a place with high racial economic segregation, a proliferation of low-wage jobs, and a place that was not very sustainable in terms of, as we saw, the weakness of the coastal borders and the wetlands to protect what is a major economic center. And so I think that this is a long game, Fred, and what we're seeing is enormous civic policy experiments and strategies underway in the greater New Orleans area to address all of those things, create opportunities for Black males and low-income people and low-skilled workers so that when they return to the community or stay in New Orleans, that New Orleans is a platform for opportunity for them. How do we, as we diversify beyond just energy and tourism, how do we create an economy that generates good jobs for all the people of New Orleans? And then how do we build a more resilient, environmental, sustainable community that is a model for all places, not just the Gulf Coast, but think about all the hurricanes that hit up the East Coast, right, or disasters that hit other communities in the United States or around the world. And so I think what New Orleans is doing what most cities are trying to do, which is how do we create a more inclusive economy, a more robust economy that's going to be competitive in the long term, but do in a way that's going to be safe and resilient and environmentally strong going forward. And so just since you said I was just there, I brought, since this is a podcast, I want to dingle a couple things for you. I brought from my last trip, thanks to my friends over at the data center, Mardi Gras beads, a really cute little bracelet of high-heeled shoes. But this is I bring this in part to say there's so much optimism and creativity in this community. And I would say today, going into 10 years, this is a community that doesn't want to be solely defined by the hurricane 10 years ago. Yeah. I think they want to be defined as that really creative place in the South that can embrace people from all communities of color, all ethnic groups, in a way that's really fun, creative, inclusive, and just unique. And it's going to be, we can talk about the numbers in a moment, but I think that's their real challenge.
I think that's a great point that you make, and I'm glad you made it. New Orleans is a fun, awesome, vibrant city. I've always thought so. I was thinking back to the one time I've been there for Mardi Gras. My wife and I were there many years ago, and I'll just admit, we did not drink a drop of alcohol, and we were there on St. Charles Avenue, and we had a blast competing for the throws and the trinkets like what you brought today. So it's a wonderful thing, and I love that area.
And they want people to come continue to visit there and be part of their community, and they aren't shy about saying, listen, yes, we had something really catastrophic happen to us. We also had an oil spill, but we're going to continue to remake New Orleans unique and come be part of that.
Terrific. Yep. Well, while you were there recently, what kinds of people did you meet? What kinds of things did you learn about maybe specific programs that the region is undertaking to achieve some of its longer term goals?
Yeah. Well, before I answer that, let me just say a few words about what New Orleans looks like today.
Sure.
Because I'm sure that's on the back of everyone's mind. You know, this is a community that has grown. It has restored a bulk of its population now. I think it's only 93% lower than its population level back in 2010, back in 2000. It has recovered all the jobs it lost during the recession. It has more entrepreneurial activity and startups, I think, than in most cities today, and they're being recognized by that from magazines and other national outfits. There has been job growth. So there's been investments in the coastal infrastructure, which I will talk about. So there's a lot of good trends that are happening. But want to be honest that New Orleans today is fundamentally smaller as an economy than it was before the storm. And it is smaller in population. The challenges that it faces right now is that there are there's more poverty in the region than before the storm. Most of that is because there's more poor people in the suburbs, less in the city, but And because the population has shrunk, actually the share has increased. So there's more poverty in the region than before the storm.
And that tracks with a lot of the research that your colleagues in Metro have done about the geography of suburban poverty.
Yes, and that is a trend that is not just unique to New Orleans, thank you for saying that, but is consistent with what you're seeing around the country. And they have had job growth, but what we're seeing is most of the job growth has occurred in the low-wage sector, mm-hmm. hospitality and so on, and a lot of the job losses have been in the higher-paying, more secure jobs. And so we really have an we're at a point now where we have to really think hard about how to continue to drive the right kind of growth that makes New Orleans a platform for opportunity and income growth for all its citizens. And in fact, one of the things that Mayor Landrieu has done is created an opportunity network or task force to address one very specific challenge he's seeing in the community, which is that Black males in New Orleans are less likely to have a job than a lot of their peers in other cities, mm-hmm. and even much 20% lower rates than whites and Hispanics in the community. So, so that's sort of a symbol of the challenge they have today. But that is the reason why Metro Brookings was in New Orleans mm-hmm. at the 10-year anniversary, is to help them come up with some continue to experiment with solutions around inclusive growth, so that New Orleans continues to emerge from multiple disasters from a as a stronger place. So what are we doing in the community? Mm-hmm. First, we are, as part of the 10th anniversary, Brookings will be releasing an analysis in the next month or two that will show the city where the good jobs are for workers of color and workers who do not have a college degree. I think this is really important because I think there's a sense that we don't always have to put low-skill, low-wage workers or low-skill workers into low-wage jobs. Mm-hmm. And so we are trying to find an affirmative place to show that there are good-paying jobs with benefits that hire workers of color or workers with maybe just a high school diploma and or less than a four-year degree. And there's real strategies for right. how to connect people to those good jobs.
Like in the healthcare sector, for example. I think there was some other research that y'all did mm-hmm. about sub-baccalaureate types of careers.
Yeah, I think that this, you'll find them in, you know, we found them in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. We found them in the trade and logistics sector, which still remains robust. We did find them in the hospitality sector, as you mentioned. And we also found them in sales. And when you think about how every office, whether you're a service firm or a production firm, you need an administrative assistant. You need an office assistant. You need a clerk. And those actually pay well. Mm-hmm. And there's real career opportunities in those. And so I think we're seeing a mix of production services jobs that I think are really good opportunities for the workers in that community. The other thing I would say, Fred, is that 10 years out, I think New Orleans continues to be full of civic energy. I think that's been part of its strength. It is not a city that has a lot of resources. So this is a mayor and a group of leaders that have done a really good job of taking advantage or partnering with federal government and philanthropic leaders from all over the country to really undertake bold reforms in New Orleans. You still see charter schools they have the largest charter school experiment going on in the country.
Right.
Every single school is a charter. There are still kinks in the system there, but I think that that is a great place to start and something to look at.
And it ranks number one in the Brown Center's Choice in Competition Index of all school districts in the country. And the New Orleans Recovery District is the number one for choice in competition.
Oh, that's great. I didn't even know that. There is real energy around coastal restoration right now. It's not, I think we have all heard in bits and pieces that the proceeds from the BP spill are being put towards coastal restoration. Mm-hmm. So $2 billion of investments at from the BP litigation is going to be coming into investing in wetlands and other restoration activities along the coast. And that's probably a down payment to a plan that the state Coastal Restoration Authority has that's about up to $50 billion worth of projects.
Sure.
Those are going to create jobs. Those are going to create real opportunities. And there's enormous energy right now, no pun intended, on the energy sector, but to focus on this water cluster, that how do we train workers for jobs related to the water, and particularly around protecting the natural resources and barriers to ensure that we protect this important community and economy.
What about inside New Orleans itself? What about the I might say, equity of the recovery and forward-looking plans inside the city, say, between the Ninth Ward and the more touristy areas? And we saw the Ninth Ward, a lot of devastation happened there especially.
Yeah, I think that like we just all witnessed in Baltimore. New Orleans has the same challenges mm-hmm. as those other cities, which is where the downtown, which was not actually impacted at all that very much by Hurricane Katrina, still stands strong. And those touristy areas are continued to bring in lots of new restaurants and hotels into the area. And that's generated some job growth, lots of job growth in the community. But the neighborhoods are stronger, but there are still a lot of pockets of abandoned property, vacant homes. And for that reason, there has been a lot of effort focused on land policy and home ownership and building in that community.
And so in the same way that I sort of looked at New Orleans and tried to say this and that, what about the wider region? We know that the hurricane and the other disasters affected not just the New Orleans region, but also especially coastal towns in Mississippi and other places in Louisiana. What have you found out about efforts in those areas, kind of outside the greater New Orleans region, to advance some of these goals?
You know, it's a great question, and unfortunately, Fred, we haven't spent as much time looking at those other coastal states. You know, we did that at the beginning, but increasingly what we did was focus on the southern part of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the coordination amongst these different levels of government and NGOs and private organizations is overall going well? Is everyone kind of committed to the same kind of future?
So I think first there has been recent, in the course of the 10 years, at least related to Katrina, strong federal local coordination around criminal justice reform, which was a major partnership with DOJ and that community, in rebuilding the healthcare system, which got destroyed after the storm, and HHS worked very closely now in helping to implement one of the most creative community clinics networks there. The housing recovery, obviously, the money being spent down to rebuild the homes. The coastal investments was very much federally driven to coordinate those investments into those communities. But I'd say two things, Fred, on this one. One is, I think everyone's aware now that the dollars that were spent in Katrina are now winding down rapidly. And so when we think about the challenges going forward for this community, it's going to be less dependent on federal dollars, which is true for most U.S. cities. There's just not a lot of federal resources sitting around. And for that reason, I think the big innovations, the big policies, the big strategies are going to come from other philanthropic, civic, business collaborations in that community. It's why Rockefeller Foundation is down there and has picked New Orleans to be one of its 100 resilient cities. It is a site for an Aspen workforce strategy. It is, and I could name more, there's just a lot of partnerships right now to really help prepare the workforce there for the jobs of the future, support the entrepreneurship community that's emerging, and really focus on that resilience and sustainability.
Now, I know what happened and what has happened in New Orleans is a case study in just disaster preparedness, but we're looking beyond that now. And I know other cities are probably, especially coastal cities, have looked at the experience of New Orleans in terms of how they prepare for future, say, hurricanes or other natural disasters. But your perspective is much more forward-looking in the sense of, as you've been talking about, opportunity, job, collaboration, inclusiveness. What lessons, if any, do you think other metropolitan areas around the country, and even around the world, can take from the New Orleans experience?
Well, that's a great question. And I think that it's a great question for a couple of reasons. One is every community around the country is going to, at one point, be hit by some crisis in whatever form, environmental, economic, industry. So adaptation, being able to respond, is really important. I think the second reason why that's important is because the challenges that New Orleans is experiencing today is unlike or is very similar to what we're seeing in cities across the country. This economic recovery is actually not lifting all boats nationally. Half of U.S. metropolitan areas have yet to restore the jobs they have lost. Labor force participation rates in U.S. metros are lower than they were before the storm. Lower than before the recession. Poverty has not only risen just in New Orleans, but it's risen in every community around the country. It is higher today than it was before the recession. And so this national conversation about how we grow with opportunity is really the challenge of the day, is the conversation we're having in most cities. So I think that what people can learn from New Orleans is that even though New Orleans benefited from an influx of government resources, it was really the residents and nonprofits in the community that really shaped those investments in a way that led to these reforms. Because if you recall, both Mayor Nagin was not necessarily the best organizer of the response immediately after the storm. It ended up being highly dependent on civic and citizen action. And I think that some of the positive changes we're seeing is a result of not government action, but local ability to work together to get things done. And that's what it ultimately comes down to, is that creativity, that cohesion, that collaboration that creates resilience in many places.
I'm going to pick up this Mardi Gras throw here and just shake it one more time before I ask you as we're closing here. And I want to describe it real quick. It's tiny blue high-heeled slippers in a bracelet. And it sounds to me that despite all of the continuing issues in this urban area that it shares with plenty of other urban areas around the country, it sounds to me like you are hopeful, ultimately, about the future of New Orleans and the direction it's going. Would you say that's true?
I am hopeful. And I'm hopeful, one, because the data center, our partner in New Orleans, has more capacity today than it did 10 years ago. And with that capacity, they have put out so much analysis to inform decision making. So when I go into New Orleans now, everyone is informed, from the political class to the nonprofits to the philanthropic community. Everyone is aware of how New Orleans is doing, and there almost is a shared narrative about the community. That sense of unity is really important, so you can harness everyone's energies towards a shared set of strategy, problems or challenges. So I feel that this city is very aware of itself. It is working closer together than it had been before the storm. There are so many innovations, initiatives underway. My hope is that all those things will be channeled in a positive way so that we can start to see some numbers really change in their favor over time.
Well, I hope it would be appropriate then to exclaim with the traditional Mardi Gras greeting, if I may, Laissez le bon temps brûler. Amy, thank you very much for joining me today. And again, I'm excited that you're the guest on this 50th episode of the Brookings Cafeteria Podcast.
And thanks for making New Orleans also part of your story.
I'm glad to. You can learn more about Amy Liu and her research on our website, brookings.edu/metro. And in the coming weeks, look for Metro's report on the Greater New Orleans region. My thanks to my producer, Zach Kolzer, our artist, Jessica Pavone, and our online support team of Rebecca Weiser and Eric Abalahin. Also, thanks to Thomas Young and Terrence Woodbury for helping me put this interview together. You can subscribe to the Brookings Cafeteria on iTunes, listen on Stitcher, and send feedback email to bcp@brookings.edu. I'm Fred Dews. We're done. Thank you, Amy.
All right, that was good. I liked the...
I talk with the Brook. Stay tuned to hear blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to cut that off.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
All right, we're rolling.
Welcome to the Brookings Cafeteria, a podcast about ideas and the experts who have them. I'm your host, Fred Dews. In today's episode, I talk with a Brookings expert who recently visited New Orleans ahead of the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina striking the Gulf Coast. Welcome to the Brookings Cafeteria, a podcast about ideas and the experts who have them. I'm your host, Fred Dews. In today's episode, I talk with a Brookings expert who recently visited New Orleans ahead of the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina striking the Gulf Coast. I think that's okay. I don't need to actually say what to expect in the conversation.
I think it's fine.
You have a scowl on your face.
A scowl?
Kind of like this.
Oh. I think it's just the light. When it's from top down, it makes it look dramatic. Why, well, we got everything in the sunglasses.
Yeah.